Draco Malfoy was standing there with his wife and son, a dark coat buttoned up to his throat. His hair was receding somewhat, which emphasized the pointed chin. The new boy resembled Draco as much as Albus resembled Harry. Draco caught sight of Harry, Ron, Hermione, and Ginny staring at him, nodded curtly, and turned away again.
"So that's little Scorpius," said Ron under his breath. "Make sure you beat him in every test, Rosie. Thank God you inherited your mother's brains." "Ron, for heaven's sake," said Hermione, half stern, half amused. "Don't try to turn them against each other before they've even started school." "You're right, sorry," said Ron. But unable to help himself, he added, "Don't get too friendly with him though, Rosie. Grandad Weasley would never forgive you if you married a pureblood."
"Hey!"
James had reappeared. He had divested himself of his trunk, owl and trolley, and was evidently bursting with news.
"Teddy's back there," he said breathlessly, pointing back over his shoulder into the billowing clouds of steam. "Just seen him. And guess what he's doing? Snogging Victoire."
He gazed up at the adults, evidently disappointed by the lack of reaction.
"Our Teddy, Teddy Lupin, snogging our Victoire, our cousin. And I asked Teddy what he was doing."
"You interrupted them," said Ginny. "You are so like Ron. And he said he'd come to see her off, and then he told me to go away. He's snogging her," James added, as though worried he had not made himself clear.
"Oh, it would be lovely if they got married," whispered Lily ecstatically. "Teddy would really be part of the family then."
"He already comes round for dinner about four times a week," said Harry. "Why don't we just invite him to live with us and have done with it?"
"Yeah," said James enthusiastically. "I don't mind sharing with Al. Teddy could have my room."
"No," said Harry firmly. "You and Al will share a room only when I want the house demolished." He checked the battered old watch that had once been Fabian Pruitt's. "It's nearly 11. You'd better get on board."
"Don't forget to give Neville our love," Ginny told James as she hugged him. "Mom, I can't give a professor love." "But you know Neville."
James rolled his eyes.
"Outside, yeah. But at school, he's Professor Longbottom, isn't he? I can't walk into Herbology and give him love."
Shaking his head at his mother's foolishness, he vented his feelings by aiming a kick at Albus.
"See you later, Al. Watch out for the Thestrals."
"I thought they were invisible. You said they were invisible."
But James merely laughed, permitted his mother to kiss him, gave his father a fleeting hug, then leapt onto the rapidly filling train. They saw him wave, then sprint away up the corridor to find his friends. "Thestrals are nothing to worry about," Harry told Albus. "They're gentle things. There's nothing scary about them. Anyway, you won't be going up to school in the carriages. You'll be going in the boats." Ginny kissed Albus goodbye.
"See you at Christmas."
"Bye, Al," said Harry as his son hugged him. "Don't forget, Hagrid's invited you to tea next Friday. Don't mess with Peeves. Don't duel anyone till you've learned how. And don't let James wind you up."
"What if I'm in Slytherin?"